Okay, it's a great pleasure for me to be here as an experimentalist. It's the first time I'm in Santa Barbara at this institute, and I enjoy it a lot. But as mentioned by Carla, it's exactly a terrible day. But okay, so we will still have this talk, and it's about the physics of multiple carbon nanotubes. This is a subject we work on. Let me see whether I can get this. Okay. So we work on that for a couple of years already in Basel, and this is a sort of more a summary of people that have been involved. So we have in Basel there have been many students, notably Adrian Bachtold, who later went to Paul McEwen's group, and is now in Delft, and he's moving further as a professor to Paris. Mark Beutler is still with me, students, and then a couple of other students who already left, Mike Krieger and some postdocs. And we get the material from Laszlo Forrest's group at DPFL in Lausanne. And we have in one subject where we have looked into zero bias anomaly due to electron-electron interaction. We have had a very nice collaboration with Paul McEwen's group, where Adrian Bachtold went to as a postdoc. And so I will also report on that work today. Okay, so this is my outline. It's quite a long list. First, I have some introduction, showing some beautiful pictures. That's the advantage of the experimentalist, as mentioned by you, so we can show some nice pictures. And then about the fabrication, then I will show some discuss some elementary facts about band structures, and then I will go and summarize the state of the art of multiple nanotube, what we know about. And then these are the newer subjects here: tunneling spectroscopy, zero bias anomaly, and then I put this in conductance fluctuation because there's some questions I already had. I mean, these are measurements more than a year old, but we don't understand them, and that's a good opportunity here to present it to series. Maybe I can solve this problem, I hope. And then it was very useful for me to come here. And then so we have quantum dots, nanotube quantum dots. I will discuss some recent results on condo effects, also multiple carbon nanotubes, and finally we'll discuss some also recent preliminary data on proximity-induced superconductivity. Okay, so this sheet will show up all the time when I go to the next topic. It will be underlined yellow, so we'll just start with this first part, very brief. So as you know, there are two types of nanotubes. The more fundamental one, single wall carbon nanotubes, just composed of one shell, typical diameter 1 nanometer, and then the originally found historically 10 years ago already by CIMA, the multiple carbon nanotubes, which are composed of a stacked concentric shells, typically diameter which we have is about 10 to 20 nanometer, and they have about 10 to 20 shells approximately. Okay, so the material we use has been obtained by arc discharge. This is just, you have graphite electrodes, and then you produce an arc discharge, and then you will get all kind of nanotubes, but also fullerenes, and so you need a process to purify the material. And in this process, you can get single wall nanotubes. These are then bundles of single wall nanotubes, provided if you add some catalysts to the graphite, which are just, cobalt or iron, or if you don't use the catalyst, you mostly get multiple carbon nanotubes, which are very nicely graphitized. Okay, so this is the machine, how it looks like, the material we obtained from Lausanne, as I mentioned already. It's just a simple machine. These are the graphite electrodes here, and then this thing is cooled, and all the material is just collected on the walls of this cooled metal cylinder. Okay, so just a few pictures. So you can also get, there are other methods to get nanotubes, like you can grow them by laser evaporation. This was is a very well-known technique for obtaining single nanotubes, but also CVD is very popular now. And in CVD, you can get all single nanotube, multiple nanotube, but sometimes you also get some weird stuff like this one. Just show it because it's a nice picture. They call it the barbed wires. And this is not what we want to have. And there are other things which look very nice in TEM. So these are multiple nanotubes which are not so perfectly graphitized. You can see that there are real defects here. There are some sheets going inside, which they call the Harry tubes. And you have also seen this. You can get spirals, which have a very nice regular pitch and seem to be multiple nanotubes here, which also very well gravitized. Why they form and what the pitch is and so on, it's not really known. Okay, so that's the material we work on. They are very, very well, very nicely graphitized. They have a very low defect. There's no iron or no metallic particles in the material. The only defects present in the material we use are these so-called bamboo defects. These are just some closer inside and inner shells. But since as we will show in the measurement, we essentially contact the outer tubes, the outer shells, it doesn't really matter for our experiments. Okay, so then we just, as everybody else does, we spread the nanotubes on the surface, and then we use e-beam lithography to evaporate gold contacts over the nanotubes. So this is an example of a device where we have four electrodes, gold electrodes, and a finger spacing of about 300 nanometer. We can do this also for longer tubes. You can see here on the surface also a lot of other stuff. So you need a method to select a nanotube, so you have to look at it before you evaporate the contacts. So this is now a nanotube measured on the length of 2 micrometer, and so we have measurement up to 10 micrometer. So we also studied length dependence. Okay, so we also looked into the opposite, so that you put the nanotube on top of contacts. So in particular in this case, this is gold fingers on a silicon substrate with a silicon oxide surface layer. The silicon oxide has been etched away so that the nanotube just flies over these contacts, freely supported. This was just to find out whether the interaction with the substrate would have any effect on the transport properties, but this is not the case. And this is not what we usually do in measurement, because it turns out that if you put the nanotube on top of the electrodes, then the contact resistances are pretty large, and they are very low in the opposite regime when you evaporate metal over the nanotube. And that's all measurements I will discuss have been obtained in previous examples. So metal evaporated over the nanotubes. Okay, so I would just briefly remind you of some very elementary facts here. Okay, so carbon nanotubes start out from a graphite sheet, and in graphite you have the carbon atoms are threefold coordinated and form these sp2 planar orbitals. So three electrons are used for this bonding, and then the fourth electron will make your bend structure, your valence bends. And you have just to note that there are two carbon atoms in the unit cell. So if there is no band overlap, you have two valence electrons, and it will be an insulator, a semiconductor. If there is band overlap, it will be metal. And it turns out that it is very special. The simple tight binding band structure just gives you a band overlap which is restricted to 2 points in the prion zone. So this is the valence band, or chemists will call it pi band and the pi star, the antibonding band, and there is some band overlap just ideally at a singular point at the Brillouin zone boundary, which are called the K and the K prime points. What you can do, you can now, if you take the sheet and roll it, and then you have to apply periodic boundary condition, then this will imply a quantization of K vector in the transversal direction, and then this will just give you slices through this bend structure, and these slices will result in one-dimensional bend structure. And if a slice will just go through the K point, then you have crossing bands, a metallic nanotube, and if the slice will not go, or no slice will go through one of the K points, it's an insulator. So it depends on the form of these carbon nanotubes, what you will get, there are many different possibilities to wrap a tube into a cylinder. And as I said, there will be metallic ones and semiconducting ones. Okay, ideally, they will, at zero temperature, you will just be an insulator with an end cap, or it is metal and has actually two channels, which should ideally resolve, if it is ballistic, to a conductance of 4E squared over H. Okay, so one can simplify this band model, and it's the only thing which I really need is one can expand, one can use a linear expansion for the energy around these K points, and then apply this periodic boundary condition. And if one does this linear expansion, when the band structure just looks like this, this is for the metallic case. You have these two crossing bands, and they are twofold degenerate, one originate from K and the other from K prime. And then if it's semiconducting, ideally it's just have a gap, and there is a single parameter, which is here called E naught, which describes the energy, and this parameter scales with 1 over diameter. And the typical number here, say for a large nanotube, like the multiple nanotubes 10 nanometer diameter, is of the order of 100 millivolt, whereas this energy scale for a 1 nanometer single wall nanotube is an order of magnitude large, like 1 volt. So we're just dealing with energy scales in our experiments of 100 millivolt or less, 50 millivolt, typical energy scales. Okay, so I would like to tell you that these features, this reminiscent Van Hove singularity, reminiscent for one-dimensional band structure, have been measured by tunneling spectroscopy using STMs in single wall nanotube, for example, by Case Decker's group. Okay, now what about multiple nanotubes? There are many concerns. Okay, question first: is ballistic transport possible in such materials at all? Since these are multi-shell things, and these shells might couple with each other, and in the worst case, maybe even three-dimensional, but it could be just graphite-like. So we would like to know whether this system is 1D, 2D, or whatever. So there are many worries in this material. And actually, most people ask me, why do you investigate multiple nanotubes? This is really terrible. I mean, you would like to look at single-wall nanotubes, but it's just historical. I mean, cannot help it. We just had this nice group in Lausanne who made this material already 6-7 years ago, very early. And it was very, very high-quality material. And it was just natural. Just there next door, okay, we just started with that material. And it's true, it's more complicated than single-wall nanotubes, but okay, I need to have a challenge. So I still stick to this material. Now, okay, I will come to some facts. Okay, the first fact is they are really tubular material. This I will just very brief because this is all the result. We did an experiment where you had this nanotube contacted and then applied paramagnetic field, and we looked at the conductance as a function of paramagnetic field, and then you get this Aronoff Bohm effect. And we observed such things, and from these observation you can conclude clearly that the material is tubular, so they are tubes. And the next fact, in a way the multi-wall nanotubes are alike the single-wall nanotubes in the following sense. It turns out from these next measurements that essentially the current flows in the outermost shell. Most of the current flows in the outermost shell. And that is just the reason for that is just because although it's a multi-shell structure, it's just because we contact from the outside, we evaporate the metal contacts onto the nanotube. It's just that the current is injected in the outermost shell first. And now it seems that the coupling between the outer shell and the next inner shell is very, very weak, at least for these distances of a few hundred nanometer up to 1 micrometer, so that most of the DC current flows in the outermost shell. So you just look at one tube, essentially. This is not true for AC transport, I mean, because you can have internal screening and so on, which has an effect on some other experiments. But for DC transport, it's just like a single wall nanotube in a sense. Okay, then there is this order. That's fact number three. And one experiment which was more recent has been done in Paul McEwen's group, where they just applied a voltage on a multiple nanotube and then measured with an AFM tip, which has a metallic electrode. I mean, tip was a voltage probe, essentially. They measured the potential drop along the nanotube, and they found that it drops sort of linearly. Whereas in single-wall nanotube, it was just constant, demonstrating that it's ballistic, whereas here demonstrating it's diffusive. However, these experiments have been done at room temperature, and as I said, the energy scale is about 50 millivolt. You know, you get, and also all sort of other inelastic processes may take a role, which will lead just to short scattering lengths, not due to impurities, but due to other inelastic channels. So that's, I mean, this can be questions, you know, whether this is still holds at low temperature. But we have also from low temperature earlier data of ourselves. I mean, this which we published, this Aronoff Bohm type measurements and weak localization. I would just really show it. And from that, we know that there is some scattering in the material, which leads to some sort of a resistance per unit length, an intrinsic resistance of this size, about 5 to 10 kilo per micrometer. Well, that's what, okay, this is, these are these old experiments which are just previous. This is the Aronoff, well, it's not really Aronoff Bohm, it's the ultra Aronoff Spivak effect, which you see. This is the resistance as a function of parallel magnetic field, and it shows this weak localization peak, which is this weak localization peak, which is sort of should be periodically repeated. And you don't see many periods because the system is so small, it's hard to get the flux quantum through the system, which leads to, I mean, you need 10 Teslas or more. But from this experiment, it can be very well described because main period is H over 2E. This is the AES effect, and it's in agreement also with perpendicular magnetic field, where you see this is perpendicular magnetic field, where you see weak localization, sort of conductance fluctuation at low temperature, and from that you can get out of scattering lengths, and you get out these parameters about 5 kilo-ohm per micrometer intrinsic resistance. Okay, so fact number four, nanotubes are doped, and they are naturally, I mean, in quotation, hole doped. In air, and the carrier density can be controlled by a gate. Everybody uses gate, but in order to shift Fermi level substantially, you need a sort of a strong gate, which means you have to put the gate very, very close to the nanotube to be able to shift it over, you know, substantially, like 1 volt or so. So how do you know that they are doped? And this is resolved. We came out at the beginning of this year. Work we did last year. This is we took some nanotube into an electrolyte. So this is a sort of very different experiment where we gate through electrolyte. This is shown here. How it I mean, this is a device. There's an array. We always make arrays of nanotubes, and they just measurement at room temperature with probes. And there's an additional probe, which is a micropipette, in which there is an electrolyte with an electrode. And we just gate it over this electrolyte. And this is schematically shown here. So typically what you normally do, you have a nanotube, then there's a silicon oxide, vary about 400 nanometer or so in thickness, and you use the substrate as a gate. And this is not very effective. I mean, you can shift the Fermi level a little bit, but you cannot sweep it really over volts, okay? But if you do it like this, then you somehow you gate over this electrolyte, and the screening length in typical ion concentration use is very, very short. So essentially you have a very tight capacitor. So for example, if you apply a positive voltage here, the negative ions will go to this electrode here, and the positive ions will collect to the nanotube, which then will be screened by electrons, by an accumulation of electrons in the tube. So by this biasing, you get the Fermi level will be increased, and because the capacitance is very, very large here, essentially, it's much, much larger than the intrinsic electrochemical capacitance of the tube, you can essentially shift the Fermi level over a very, very large range. And what you then found, I mean, there's certain chemical effects happening, there's certain time dependence here, I don't want to discuss this, but if you look at this curve, what you see, this is resistance as a function of gate voltage applied here, you see that the resistance somehow increases, and there's the positive voltage means that you increase the number of electrons in the tube. The Fermi level increases, but if you have a resistance increase when the number of electrons increases, then you have a p-doped material. You can say just the number of the holes is reduced by this effect, and so you have a p-type behavior here, then there's a resistance maximum, and then on this side you have the resistance goes down with the addition of more electrons, so it's n-type behavior. So here it's p, and here it's n, and so in the middle is what we call the charge neutrality point. That's Fermi level is at the crossing, you know, of the band structure. And this lies at 1 volt, okay? This is a very, very far away from zero, because you would like to have, I mean, ideally it should be at 0 volt. And, yeah? Yeah, okay, so because of very, very large electrode nanotube capacity, much larger than intrinsic intrinsic capacitance, it's essentially, this is a very good approximation here. So there's this is just Fermi level shift, it's about 1 volt here. This is very, very large. So this is now the picture typically you should have in mind here. So if you don't bias it with a gate, the Fermi level is here deep in the valence band. And actually this turns out that the water itself dopes it. So we can also, from this measurement, find out where the Fermi level sits in air before we put it in liquid. And it's typically the values we found is minus 0.3 EV in air. And if you put it in water, it's increased the p-doping to -1 EV. And so if you have it in air, and you just think about 30 millivolts or so for 25 nanometer diameter tube, this will mean about 10 molds. And then have this KK prime, so about 20 Okay, you have spin also, so there are about 20 modes roughly instead of 4 for single wall nanotube. So we have much more modes in the system, and because just the energy scale is much smaller. But also the same fact holds for single wall nanotube, also they are doped as well. And there's still some discussion about the origin, but we are very confident with a lot of experiments, other experiments. It's mostly due to water. It's water which is doing it, not oxygen. Okay, so I will summarize some of these facts. So there's in single wall nanotubes, one has found a one-dimensional band structure, very clear Van Hove singularity. In multiple nanotubes, we also see some smeared out Van Hove singularity. I will just show you a result soon. And there is doping in air. It's typically minus 0.3 eV, both for single wall nanotube and multiple nanotube, it's the same. And then this leads also to the same sheet doping concentration, which is given here, 10 to the 13 per square centimeter. And so every 1,000 carbon atoms is about one dopant, typically. So in a single wall nanotube, you have about 2 modes, no counting spin. Yeah. This is very low. Butlock is 1 of 10. Okay, 1 out of 10. So I mean, if you, we would like to get, you know, such strong fields and effects into tubes to maybe see superconductivity or whatever in tubes. But this is really, and you have to go to, I don't know what I mean, to really gates, you know, just metals on top or so, to do the same thing. This is still at least an order of magnitude away what Butlock achieves.
It's quite good on some unusual 2D electron gas.
I mean, this is much higher doping. This is about 2 orders of magnitude higher than what you have in 2DEX. And then the mean free pass in single wall nanotubes, it's believed to be larger than 1 micrometer. There's evidence to be, say, 1 micrometer or larger. And in multiple nanotubes, we have, I mean, hundreds of data, but they range from, there are some dirty materials which have only 10 nanometer to material which approaches also 1 micrometer. So typically what we find, say, a typical number is 100 nanometer. It's about of the order of the circumference of the tube. So it's sort of a quasi-ballistic system. So the diffusion coefficient, also this is not, I mean, for somebody in semiconductor, I put this up for a conference in EP2DS. You know, if you say a single wall nanotube, it's sort of 10 to the 4, maybe 10 to the 5, okay? But the 2DEC people, they are at 10 millions or more, okay? So it's kind of still, I mean, it's really, it's not so great, okay? Although, I mean, it's a nice material, but still, it's not yet there where people are in 2DECs, so you still have to work hard. And in even here, this is, I mean, it's better than a normal metal. Like gold, there's maybe only 10 or so, or maybe 100, but not. This is I put here. Mobilities, I put here modalities. So this is about 10 to the 5 here, instead of, say, 10 to the 7 in semiconductor, it's about 10 to the 4. Okay, so maybe we'll get also to 10 million, so 100 million, but we're not yet there, okay. Sorry? Well, I mean, this mobility is not a good concept here anyhow, so this depends now really on the doping level where you are. So, okay, so let's come now to real results, new results. I will first discuss tunneling spectroscopy, the zero bias anomaly. And first of all, there are also multiple nanotubes. I already mentioned that you can see one-dimensional features, sort of these Van Hove singularities. But since this is possible because the scattering length is typically of the order of the circumference, so there's still some remaining stuff from this one-dimensional band structure. And I will show it just there. But there's more, and there is more to, I mean, you have strong interactions, one is, or a quasi-one-dimensional system, and this we should see some suppression of the tunneling density of state. As you know, that the interacting 1D system, you have collective excitation, which are charged density waves, and the most simple possible model is this Lutting liquid model, which somehow I have a sketch for that, how you can think about it. So if you tunnel into such a system, it will, the effective quasi-particle density of state will be suppressed. Okay, so this is what we can see. Maybe first, this is a very complicated graph. It shows a lot of spectras, DIDV. Tunnel spectras is a tunnel contact here, a high ohmic contact, like 1 megaohm. contact, you apply a voltage here and you measure differential conductance, which is proportional to the tunneling density of state. And then you can see, I mean, a lot of wiggles. This is in parallel magnetic field, and we change the magnetic field. And then, because if you're in parallel magnetic field and you see some 1D band structure effect, there should be an Arnold-Bohm effect, which will shift all these band structures up and down periodically with phi naught. And you expect it to see that such wiggles, or which when they come from Van Hove singularities or from one-dimensional band structure, you would expect them to move up and down in energy in a certain fashion. So some of the peaks really move up and down in energy. There's some level crossing, but also some level which do not cross, and there's certain levels don't seem to be periodic at all. So it's quite complicated. But what is clear is that if you follow, for example, this one, so the size of shift in energy scale is actually what you would expect. It corresponds to the spacing of the sublevels, and also the magnetic field scale would correspond roughly to phi naught. So we believe that these outer wiggles here, they're really due to Van Hove singularities. I mean, what is left over, so to speak. But inside you see much more wiggles. I mean, there's some interference probably at lower energy. But then the most striking thing is the zero bias anomaly. All the curves are offset for clarity, so you have always a dip, very pronounced dip at zero bias. Okay, so we look just at this another sample where you can see the temperature dependent of one particular curve. So this is the equilibrium conductance as a function of temperature on a log-log plot. And then this is the same thing as a function of voltage. And you can see at different temperature, if you go to lower temperature, the dip gets more and more pronounced. There is already shown here, a power law here, and it's also plotted here. It's roughly power law. It's not exact, but it's as good as what have people seen in single wall nanotube, because if you make usually this reduced scale plot, which they do, normalized conductance, then as a function of EV divided by KT, and put all the, you can get all the data points to cast onto a universal plot, which is shown here with a power law. I mean, power law slope would be the power is given by zero. It's about 0.36 in this case. So this is very reminiscent of flattening liquid behavior. And then people tell me usually, are you crazy? How can you say that there's something to do with flattening liquid? You have a diffusive system, it's multimode and so on. So it's not a flattening liquid, but this is sort of a definition. Strictly speaking, flattening liquid is a one-mode ballistic system. And this is certainly not that because we see weak localization, but I will just explain you now that this, what we see here is really from the field propagation point of view, it's sort of in the limit of the Luttinger liquid.
What is the value of EV power compared to current velocity divided by EV? When you say the sort of result, I mean that if you divide the numbers,
Fermi velocity
divided by the velocity and divided by EV, and this gives you
the which number you want to know? Fermi velocity or what?
Fermi velocity divided by EV.
There should be H bar somewhere. that's not so. You asked to talk to an experimentalist. We can discuss later. We thought about it. Ms. Hermann Graber had a long discussion, so I can give you a list of all the parameters, okay, which are important for this experiment.
I guess my question was, why do you say that
it's just because. In this energy regime where we observe it, it's just above, say, H bar over tau, where tau is the scattering time. So essentially for the energy scale we look at, the disorder is not important. So then this is what we did. I mean, this was part of this experiment together with Paul McEwen. This part has been done in Paul McEwen's group. And what people have done in single wall nanotubes is also to look at the zero bias anomaly on the different geometrical layouts. For example, you can tunnel into the bulk from a gold metal, which is supposed to be Fermi liquid, and then it gives you an exponent for bulk tunneling, or you can tunnel into the end, which gives you an end exponent, and so you can do more weird things. You can tunnel from one tube to another tube, which is then sort of from a latting liquid sort of end into the bulk, or from end to end. And in each case, the power gets, each tunneling is sort of more suppressed, and the power, the exponent grows and grows. And This is these are the layouts. This I already showed you, an experiment of this type here, and this is the layout for these two type of experiments here, which have been done. So this is nanotube, which has been pushed into the middle of the other one, another nanotube here, just by AFM manipulation, and then afterwards the contact has been added, and then what measures here is sort of the tunneling from the one tube into the bulk of the other. These are two tubes here which have been pushed together, and then they have been squeezed a bit and bended here, so the tunnel contact is just here of two tubes, so they tunnel from the end into the end of the other one. So what came out in these experiments, I think there's quite a lot of wiggles, as you see here, if you compare, this was the initial one which I showed you before, from a gold contact tunneling into the bulk of the tube. This is about the 0.3 exponent, this is a log-log plot, and then the exponent, you know, it gets steeper and steeper, this is end bulk and then end. And I've given here these three exponents, when you have done about 10 samples each or so, so you get an error bar. I will just explain you this line here. It turns out that in our case, you can describe the exponent alpha just as a simple rule that alpha is the sum of alpha 1 plus alpha 2, where the 1 and 2 corresponds to either side of the junction, where you have to take 0 for gold, which is the Fermi liquid. So if you tunnel from gold into, say, the nanotube, then the gold part does not do anything on the power, does not give you any renormalization. Whereas for the other case, if you tunnel into the bulk, you have about 0.3, as I showed you before. And if you tunnel into the end, then it's twice within the accuracy of tunneling into the bulk. So with that, you can get all the exponents. For example, from end to bulk would mean that you have to put here end plus bulk. And so end plus bulk is 2 times bulk, so it's 3 times the alpha bulk, is about 0.9 exponent here. I did a mistake here. This is end-end, okay, this would be roughly 0.9, and this would be 1.2. Okay, so now about this disorder, it's not a ballistic wire, okay, so it's a sort of a disordered system with 10 to 20 modes, and so the question is how can we really reconcile this sort of with Lutting liquid picture. So another way to look at it is just that the system you look at is sort of an RCL transmission line, because there's an intrinsic resistance, so there's scattering which can be cast into a resistance here. And in our case, it just turns out that that the frequency or the voltage which we apply is such, first of all, that it's not large enough. I mean, it's small enough that the system remains sort of one-dimensional, not two-dimensional. But it's large enough. It's larger so that the inductance part dominates the resistance per unit length. And so if this is the case, or this is equivalent to say that the voltage is larger than H bar divided by tau, if this is the case, you can just drop the resistance. You have an LC transmission line, and you know an LC transmission line has a real resistance. The spectral density in this frequency range is constant, and it turns out that this resistance just gives the right power. You can also describe this by just environmental Kumbh-Lockhart theory, having this transmission line in the environment, and this transmission line picture will just give you also the doubling of the exponent. So if you tunnel into the middle of the transmission line, it's just two transmission lines in parallel, whereas if you tunnel, which has half the resistance, whereas if you tunnel into the end, you just have double the exponent. Okay, so the interesting thing is now that there is quite some activity, or has been some activity, but I don't know whether it will continue, about this issue about non-perturbative theories for the density, tunneling density of state of interacting multimode systems. And this is a rather older one. This is actually this limit we have to measure now. This is sort of the multi-line, multimode expansion of the Lutting liquid thing, where you have more modes. This is going to the classical limit. Then you get a power law, and the power is somehow reduced by 1 over square root n, where n is the number of modes. Then you have the dirty regimes. This is a theory by Rohlbühler and Glabert, just recently came out, where this is not what we see, but where you have a sort of a stronger dependence than the power law. And there's also recent work from Glassmann and co-workers here, And then finally, there's sort of, which I call it now the superdirectivity regime. This is work by Egger and Kogolin, where you have two-dimensional diffusion on the sheet, on the nanotube, which then, again, would lead to power law, but that's not what we observe here. So there's still, I mean, there's a very rich physics going on here, much richer than in single-wall nanotubes, and we're still, I mean, it's just here, this is sort of the same thing as in single-wall nanotube, just multimode, and it seems there's experiments coming here also in this regime. Okay, now I come to the next topic, conductance fluctuation, where I have the questions to you. This is a very long tube, about 7 micrometer here, where you look at conductance as a function of backgate. This is a regular backgate. And you see that it just, I mean, these are, I mean, if you lower the temperature, conductance goes down, and there is some conductance fluctuations increase. And you can try to plot the RMS conductance fluctuation as a function of temperature here. It just looks like a regular diffusive wire. And if you do so, it all is fine here in this case. So we found this is a log-log plot, the conductance RMS fluctuation as a function of temperature. It has a 0.5 slope, minus 0.5 here. And that's very much in agreement with UCF theory, taking just self-averaging with an L phi that is determined by Nyquist defacing in 1D. Then you get this square root of this 0.5. So there is no question here, no puzzle here.
So if it's sorry. Thermal.
Yes. Yes. Now the problem comes if you go to shorter tubes. So I show you now here one, which is 1 micrometer long. Unfortunately, this is not yet plotted. I mean, I didn't have the data. I just made it up, this transparency here. I didn't have the data with E squared over H, but that plot, I put it at 2 E squared over H. So as you see, this is the low temperature data is close to 2 E squared over H. This system has quite high conductance. All the curves are here offset. And this is offset of each curve, so there's much less temperature dependence. So conductance is almost constant. If you lower the temperature, it goes down a little bit, and the fluctuation increase. And now if you plot here the RMS fluctuation as a function of temperature, about more than 1.5 order of magnitude, then we just get a slope of minus 0.3. And we have several data of this. It just cannot make any sense out of it. Okay, so we don't understand this. And it gets even worse, because we have also one data where we looked in magnetic field as well. So this is even shorter one, but it doesn't really matter. This is 0.3 micrometer. Again, these curves are offset. There's very weak temperature dependence. This is E squared over H. This is about 2 E squared over H. So this also is around 2 E squared over H here. And now we looked at it at the same. We extracted the conductance fluctuation as a function of gate when you sweep the gate, but we also sweep the magnetic field in another limit up to 15 Tesla, and you have also G fluctuations, and you extracted the RMS fluctuation from the magnetic field sweeps, and then these are the points. This is from magnetic field sweeps. Okay, they're lower because probably already at 1 Tesla, so maybe you break this time reverse symmetry and then you get smaller values, yeah? If you think in terms of a dot, well, it's on this scale. Okay, so you will have, that maybe has, it's a very important remark, but you can think already as, maybe this is the solution, it's close to an open quantum dot, and you will see afterwards, I show you also, then really Coulomb blockade features in grayscale plots. And which may be related to this fact that we are already close to a dot, okay, to a quantum dot, and that may be explained why we have different temperature dependence. But
so why can you ignore thermal suit? So h bar d over kt is square root of that. That's you say that's much longer than the length of your wire.
H bar d, so the Salus energy.
There's this the competition between the effect of temperature and localization or UCF due to, let's say,
in the previous examples, which we had the 0.5, we can neglect this entire temperature where you can see this effect. So for the previous where you had the 0.5, you can neglect it. But we have some data also which is published where you see crossover at high temperature, where then this temperature effect plays a role. But but not, I don't think here. So what is now here, what is amazing is that, again, as before, from this data we get this about 0.3, minus 0.3 slope, and in the magnetic field it seems to be like before, 0.5. And it's just different in magnetic field, and so it's sort of non-universal or whatever. So it's, I don't know. I mean, maybe one solution to this problem is that, I mean, it turns out that this only happens if it's really close to 2E squared over H, and has a weak temperature dependence, and maybe has to do with some quantum dot features, or maybe even, so one, I don't know. I mean, I have this already shown several times, and I still don't know. Okay, so if you have an idea, then let me know. This is just to compare again the temperature dependence. This is the first one I showed you, a very long one. There's no offset here. This is really temperature dependent, so the conductance goes down. Whereas this is another tube now. It's also a short one, 300 nanometer. You can see there's very little temperature dependence in the mean conductance, but the fluctuations somehow increase tremendously. And in this case, actually, the there's also 0.3 here, and it starts to saturate. So here you're really getting into the limit of a quantum dot. So it's all phase coherent at low temperature. And I will show you at the low temperature also now grayscale plots of this data set which is close to quantum dot, but at higher gate voltage, because it turns out at higher gate voltage becomes very regular, much more regular, like a quantum dot. Okay. So that's nanotube quantum dots, or multiple nanotube quantum dots. So I show you one region of gate voltage which was particularly interesting for us, because this was very, very regular, surprisingly regular for a multiple nanotube. And this is shown here. So what you see, I mean, also it's 2E squared over H conductance, quite open system. So this Coulomb blockade stuff starts to be smeared out, but you can see here diamond clearly. And then you see, I mean, it's maybe, here is another big one. There's another big one here. There's maybe some coat tunneling effects here. And then you have a large diamond and followed by three small ones, and again large followed by three small ones, and so on. So there's a sort of fourfold symmetry in the system here. So it suggests a two-folded orbital degeneracy, this picture. And if you look, already you can see here already, so you can see Kondo effect, or so you see a ridge at zero bias. And indeed there is, if you look a little bit closer on that here, you can see in this area, already here, there's sort of a ridge, then there's a real blockade area, and again a ridge, which would suggest that you have just alternating Kondo effects appearing, and that's exactly seen in, this is the conductance, the equilibrium conductance along zero bias as a function of gate and for different temperature, and you can indeed see that in this area here, you know, if you lower the temperature, conductance increases, whereas here it decreases, and here it increases again. So this is really, really suggestive of Kondo effect. And also if you plot it as a function of, on the log plot, you see it's a logarithmic temperature dependent. So we also see Kondo effect in multiple nanotubes, as has been seen before, in single wall nanotubes. The striking thing for us was that there was, if there's twofold orbital degeneracy, you would expect to get a Kondo for the first electron, so there's one force filling, so you have spin one half system, and for symmetry reason, it should be also here. You wish that one whole spin one half system again, but in the middle, okay, so you have two electrons half filling, it's sort of, if it's really degenerate, and you could also get a spin one. I mean, then it depends on exchange interactions, but normally our hypothesis is that what we see here is a KK prime degeneracy. So you have two states which are degenerate due to the fact that you have always this KK prime degeneracy, and so it should also lead to twofold degenerate orbital states in the quantum dot. And since these states just lie on the dot, so you would expect that from Hund's rule that it will favor triplet state, and then you could have a spin one Kondo here, which we don't see. So we just see some simple spin one half, spin zero, spin one half, odd even effect. Okay, this is also seen if you follow the magnetic field, these peaks, it's indeed like this. So this is you can see these peaks here, and the big one, the peak four, and so on. And so if you follow the magnetic field, you see that they alternating shift to the left and to the right, to the left, to the right. And that's indicative that the spin always changes. So you have here spin one half, spin zero, spin one half, and then you can also see that they go parallel here. As it should. And the same is happening here, although the slope's a little bit different, but there may be some orbital contribution here. But if one looks at these shifts in magnetic field from same orbital state, so we compare the shift. I mean, this is the shift. I mean, this is the same orbitals. We think so that you, if we compare this, how much it opens, you should get the G factor out. And this, although I mean, there's a lot of scatter here in the data, but collected all the data we have, and I just plot here at G equal 2, and you can see that, I mean, at least it's sort of in agreement with the G factor of 2, and you wouldn't expect to be any different in this very light carbon material. Okay, so sort of a puzzle remains to us. This is about the question about this half filling. How is this possible that we don't see a Kondo effect there? If it would be really degenerate, we would expect to see something. But it turns out, if you look a little bit careful, more closer, they are not exactly degenerate. It's a very simple solution to the problem. And I mean, you cannot see it. I just draw it for you. This is a bigger, I just draw this a little bit bigger. So I haven't explained it. The big diamond, you have to think about this as this corresponds to the charging energy plus the addition, you know, to the next level, delta E. Whereas the small diamonds just corresponds to the charging energy, because they're the general level. But the middle one is a little bit bigger, and that I really don't cheat. Okay, you can see better here. We plot the evolution of the peaks in magnetic field over larger field scale now. And you can this peak here is the first one here, this position, and then the next ones and so on. So this is the first quartet, and then this is the next quartet here. And you can see that they move, but if you look carefully, you can really see, I mean, if you fit in a line, you can see that this is a little bit bigger than the distances here. It's very well seen here. This is clearly bigger than that one here. So there is not exactly degenerate. Okay, one sees very nice features. One can see that there is a single triple transition at this position here. There's also sort of a level crossing or at that position here, which we have not investigated in detail. But now our hypothesis here is the following, that we think this is really reminiscent of KK prime degeneracy, and this energy delta E star, this is just coming from a hybridization of the lead. So you have these orbital states, which are initially, if the nanotube is isolated, degenerate, but if you couple them to the leads strongly, they will start to hybridize. And this hybridization just leads to a singlet state, like in a hydrogen molecule. So for half filling, two electrons in the system, you have just one electron in each orbital, which form singlet.
Could you get that just by the effect of reflection?
Maybe also, yeah. You could get it also, yeah. Maybe also, yeah. It has the same effect. It will mix. It mix. Yeah. Sure. And now, yeah, you can use this you can give an estimate now. This delta E star is about 100 millivolt, a little bit less. So it means that the energy exchange energy would favor the triplet formation is lower than this. So maybe it's lower than 100 millivolt. All right, this was, now I'm coming to my last thing. This is very preliminary. There's nothing published on this yet. The reason, I mean, you can have a preprint of the recent thing. I just submitted something before. And for the tunneling, this part is now accepted, fortunately, with my letters. I can give you also a preprint on that if you wish. But here I have nothing written up on this subject. So, that's a very interesting area to go in, because there have been, particularly this experiment here, there have been an account for intrinsic superconductivity in single-wall nanotube. And before there were some work done, this is at Stanford here, where they have seen some proximity-induced effects. And also S-Joseon junction have been made and investigated in the Alien Boucher group. Okay, so the way we do this, we just put a bilayer. We found that you only get good contacts to nanotube if you use gold. We don't know why, but gold seems to work best. And so we make a bilayer of gold, first gold and non-tube, and then aluminum. And you have to be very careful because aluminum intermixes with gold. So once you have done it, you have to cool the sample immediately or keep it in cold. And then we do see some proximity effects. The resistance, this is just one sample where it shows that the resistance goes down below TC. And the TC is about 0.6. And it's lower than the aluminum TC. That has just to do with the fact with this gold layer, which suppresses the TC a bit, and from that you get about 100 microvolt for delta. Now we make grayscale plots, although they're not yet so nice, but you can see at least here already some features here. This is a much smaller scale than seen before. So the Coulomb blockade, I mean, the charging energy is on the level of about is about 0.2 millivolt. The diamonds would be very large here. So, but you look now at sort of these delta features from the superconductor. So you can see at least these lines here, which should come up at 2 delta because you have a NS junction. And just plot them here. The spacing is about 320 microvolt, and this is about 4 times 80. You know, we have seen 80 microvolt before as the energy scale roughly. So this is consistent with the TC of this contact we have seen before. Now, you can see already here that they have, dark is high conductance, or the region of very high conductance, low conductance, and high conductance, and so on. And if you really do cross-section here, then you can really see this is sort of the precursor to the Jostling effect. You can see the conductance really goes up now, dramatically. And there's already, 10 E squared over H here. Whereas in this region, you have the usual structure, which is known for a system which does not conduct so well, and where you have the lobs here from the BCS density of states, and then the gap, in the insulating part. And now you would like to know in what condition you get this here, in what condition, whether this is related somehow to charge and so on, whether there's some odd even effects and so on. And so we're just not really, still in the process to find out. There are very nice features appearing. You can see that, for example, you can already see here that there are some multiple Andrea effects here. So there's a substructure here. Also here you can even see two of these substructures here appearing. I just emphasize them here. For example, you can clearly see here, this is sort of multiple Andreev reflection, we think. And I show you another data. This is a little bit noisy, but still it's quite interesting. Again, you can see these lines above here. This is the spacing. This is 2 delta feature. And then if it comes. Okay, so this is a cross-section about zero bias, which shows the conductance. It's just a cross-section here through. Conductance is a function of gate voltage in the superconducting state. Again, here you have certain peaks, which if you lower the temperature, go up and they grow and grow. And if we compare this with a normal state, but just applying a very small magnetic field, then this is on the same scale here. You can see that indeed the certain features really go up. Okay, and the question is which feature grow up, and here I just expand this a little bit. It turns out that if you just make just a line at 2 E squared over H, then it turns out that all the peaks in the norm, everything which is in the normal state above 2 E squared over H becomes enhanced in the superconducting state, and everything below does not show anything. It was suppressed further. So it seems there's sort of a 2 E squared over H transition in the system, and I think maybe this is not too surprising. It's sort of similar to this granular superconducting film, where you have at low sheet conductance, it becomes an insulator, whereas at high sheet conductance, it becomes a superconductor. And here we see, there's some dispute whether this transition should be, whether it's E squared over H or 2 E squared over H, I don't know. But here it seems to be 2 E squared over H is a good value. Okay. So that's the end of the talk, roughly. So what we currently work on, we see, these nanotubes also get better and better. I don't know why, because you measure more and more, and some of them are just nicer. So there have been a very nice paper by Park's group from Harvard, where they see these Fabry para resonances, which came out in Nature. So they have a very transparent single wall nanotube, which is close to, say, 4 E squared over H, or 2 E squared over H. And then they see resonances in the grayscale plots, which have nothing to do with Coulomb blockade. And that we can also see here. This is, again, something, it's nothing to do with Coulomb blockade here. These white blobs here, these are low chi. These are the conductors strongly suppressed at this position, and this is not a Coulomb blockade area. This is a high conductance area. So you have sort of areas which they look like Coulomb blockade areas, but they're the opposite. They're high conducting. And I think these features are very, very much the same as what people see in single wall nanotube, and are likely to be sort of pair resonances. And because they are multimode, you get Fano resonances, and it's believed that these suppressions here are sort of Fano resonances, which appear. And in a okay, you can see similar things in the superconducting state. Also, this is a very high conducting sample. It's everywhere 4e squared over h. And it gets up to 40 e squared over h, and there are a lot of features inside here which you don't yet understand and which we work on. So that's sort of the end, the outlook of what we're working on. And yeah, that's it. I'd like to thank you. I mean, I have a small summary here also. Okay, this is multi-walls are nanotubes are humored quasi one dimensional hollow conductors. We have seen zero bias anomaly in agreement with. And with sort of Luttinger liquid behavior in the limit of many modes, clean limit, and sort of quantum dot physics also appearing multiple nanotube, Conway effect in open systems. And if you open further, you get sort of interference effect and Fabry-Pérot resonances to appear. Okay, thank you very much.
What is exactly the evidence for this Josephson effect in your experiments? You have a peak in the DIDV?
Well, the only thing we see that is you get a peak in the DIDV, yeah? So you would have to go to really get a Josephson current, you will probably have to go to lower temperature. So
there is no magnetic field and check it.
No, if you put a magnetic field, then this peak disappears.
No oscillations like the usual junction.
I mean, the NAC effect?
No, just the self-magnetic field introduces phases which vary. If you are too imparallel, then you could see that your nanotube itself doesn't take very much flux.
Well, okay, this is an extended tunnel junction. If you have a magnetic field in the extended, you get this interference effect. But I mean, our effective junction is very, very, very small as compared to what happens on the nanotube if you apply a magnetic field there.
So the only evidence is just this increase the zero bias conductivity.
Yeah. But that's we only see if you have a superconducting electrode, I tell you.
I don't
think that we have. I think then the disorder is the same. I suppose. I mean, there are two sources of disorder which we believe really matter. So, I mean, first is this doping stuff. This is from the outside, and this attacks also the single wall nanotubes. But I think the energy scales in the single wall nanotube is much, much larger, and you just remain with this doping within these two cross levels, and there it's just the backscattering is strongly suppressed. Whereas in the other cases, you can get much more backscattering due to lower energy scale in the other modes there. Then the additional source of scattering is probably from the inner shell. I mean, the inner shell is sort of, I mean, it's not. I mean, it's sort of like a random. It may be modeled as a random potential, background potential, which is there and will have most likely also an effect. And Reinhold Ecker has done some estimation on that. And then maybe the third thing would be real defects. I mean, real, you know, that you have not a hexagon but a pentagon and things like that. But I think also that the number of these should be very much similar. I think even I would say in multiple nanotube probably even less because people have done ESR and other spectroscopy tools and haven't found any of these defects. So I think because the arc discharge method is a very high temperature method, so you get really very clean method, clean material. Whereas for example, CVD grown, the material dye uses and so on, they produce a much lower temperature and probably have much more defects, atomic defects. So I don't think that I think the defects is probably very much similar, but it has just much more dramatic effect on multiple amount chips. That's a good question, from which I have no answer really. I mean, in this plot, we have not studied this in detail, but you can see in this plot here, I mean, you can see here also these sort of wiggles here appearing. More and more wiggles the closer you go to zero bias, and this probably also sort of interference effect which come into play. This stuff here. This is a much too small energy scale, these wiggles, than the one-dimensional band structure spacing. And okay, I mean, the details of some, we have not really studied this in detail.
Sometimes it will go again to Xia reported to have a very strong proximity effect in the list of policy in Boltzmann 2. Is there any evidence of that in your samples? It's probably a completely different geometry or if it comes on that.
I mean,
what's the length, I guess, the translation length that you have extraordinary
neutron? She argues that it only works if one takes very long tubes, in particular the ones where they claim some intrinsic superconductivity, if you take them long enough, because she somehow has the argument that if you put, this is particularly for the intrinsic superconductivity, if you put gold electrons on, it somehow is the reverse, it kills the delta. So you should have, we have measured very long tubes, I mean up to 10 micrometer, but maybe if not, unfortunately, we maybe have not worked at low enough temperature, maybe, okay, but we have never seen any evidence of such proximity, whatever effects in the normally contacted material. And the ones which are contacted with superconducting electrodes, I think I don't think that there's a big difference between our data and her data, but she has not looked in gate dependence, so they have no gate there. They just have a single sample, one experiment at one point, but we sweep now gates, it's like looking at many, many different samples. So I think we have much more data now.
And would you say you confirm what she has seen?
I mean, the proximity, what we have not really investigated, I mean, what she looked is at Josephson current, how the magnitude of the Josephson current, and that we have not yet studied. But that you will have to do a 20 millikelvin at lower temperature. It's also something we plan to do. But before, we would like to understand, when all this, there's a lot of things happening in this grayscale plot. So I would like to understand this a bit before we go to low temperature to study this also. We haven't studied this yet.
Let's thank Christian for the presentation.
Thank you.